Picture this. Single pilot. Instrument meteorological conditions. Somewhere over the Midwest, night flight. The vacuum pump failed 20 minutes ago. The backup attitude indicator is still tumbling down from the shock. Your hand flying on a partial panel. Turn coordinator, airspeed, altimeter. You've got one hand on the yoke, one eye scanning the gauges, and ATC just handed you a frequency change while you're trying to brief the approach. Your chart is half open on the kneeboard. The alternator warning light just flickered. How long can you hold this together? That scenario is not hypothetical. Variations of it appear in the National Transportation Safety Board, or NTSB, accident record regularly, partial panel night, single pilot, task saturation. The outcome depends on training, currency, experience, and what I'd call mental reserve, the bandwidth left over after managing the emergency to still fly the airplane with precision. For a long time, the aviation industry's answer to that scenario was consistent. Train harder, stay current, know your limits. Stay out of the clouds if you're not ready. Those are still the right answers, but there is now another layer on top of them. I'm Vector on Clear Direct, Radio Hangar. Today we're talking about the Garmin GFC 500 Autopilot, a certified retrofit two-axis system that has been making its way into the legacy single-engine piston fleet for several years now. I want to give you the real engineering picture, what it is, what it actually does, where it fits in the safety conversation, and what it doesn't do that some pilots assume it does. But first, a word from the people supporting this episode. This segment is supported by AviationSoul.com. They make aviation challenge coins that mark the real milestones. First solo private pilot instrument rated, CFI, the whole journey. Beautifully made and built to last, AviationSoul.com. Let's break this down. If you flew a general aviation single in the 1970s or 80s, you may have had an autopilot. But the autopilot you had was probably a wing leveler at best, maybe a one-axis roll-only system from Century, or a Piper factory option. The more capable two-axis units with altitude hold and navigation coupling tended to live in heavier aircraft. Bonanzas, Cessna 310s, Piper Aztecs, basic trainers, and entry-level cross-country singles often went without. For aircraft that did have autopilots, many of those systems were vacuum-driven or relied on aging electromechanical servos with a finite service life. As those original systems have aged out, owners have faced a choice: find a rebuilt original unit, upgrade to an aftermarket system, or fly without. Finding certified repairs for 40-year-old autopilot components is getting harder every year. The YesTech 55X was the workhorse of the autopilot retrofit market for a long time. Solid system, widely installed. But it was analog in its architecture, limited in how deeply it could integrate with modern glass avionics, and the YesTech product line was eventually absorbed into the Genesis Aerosystems family, which created some uncertainty in the support chain. Garmin identified that gap, and they engineered the GFC 500 to fill it. The GFC 500 is a digital, GPS-integrated, two-axis autopilot designed from the ground up as a retrofit system. The core philosophy is what Garmin calls a distributed architecture. Instead of a large central autopilot computer driving hydraulic actuators, the GFC 500 uses individual servo actuator modules. Small, lightweight units that mount directly at the control linkage points. One servo drives roll. A second servo drives pitch. Some installations add an electric trim servo to handle pitch trim authority independently from the main pitch servo, which makes altitude hold smoother and reduces the load on the primary servo. Each servo contains its own microprocessor, its own position sensor, and its own slip clutch. That slip clutch is important, and I want to make sure you understand what it means operationally. If the autopilot commands something you disagree with, you can overpower it. The servo doesn't fight you. You push or pull, the clutch slips, and you have full manual control immediately. You don't have to hit a disconnect switch first. That's a fundamental safety design choice, and it matters. The pilot interface is the control head, which mounts in the instrument panel, compact, roughly the size of a standard avionics base slot, and it displays mode information and allows you to set heading bugs, altitude targets, and vertical speed commands. The control module itself lives behind the panel. Now, the integration with GPS navigators is where the GFC 500 separates itself from older analog systems. If you have a Garmin GTN 650 or 750 navigator, the connection is seamless via a high-speed data bus. the autopilot can receive and fly flight plan legs, holds, procedure turns, and full instrument approaches directly from the GPS. If you've loaded an approach into your navigator, the autopilot can fly it, including the step-down fixes, the final approach course, down to the missed approach point. It also integrates with the Wide Area Augmentation System, or WAS. That matters because WAS-enabled approaches, called LPV approaches for localizer performance with vertical guidance, give you decision heights that rival an instrument landing system, or ILS, at many airports. The GFC-500 can fly those with vertical guidance, managing both pitch and roll on final approach all the way down to decision altitude. That's a capability that used to live exclusively in turbine cockpits. Here's what most people miss about the GFC-500. It's not just an autopilot, it's an envelope protection system. The first protection mode is underspeed protection. The system continuously monitors airspeed. If the aircraft slows below a defined threshold while in autopilot-coupled flight, the system will pitch the nose down to accelerate. It won't let the autopilot stall the airplane while your attention is somewhere else. This engages even if you've commanded a climb rate that the aircraft's current energy state can't sustain. The second mode is overspeed protection. In a descent, if airspeed climbs toward VNO, the normal operating speed limit, the system reduces the descent rate to keep the aircraft in the normal flight envelope. Another quiet layer for moments when pilot attention is pulled away from the airspeed tape. The third mode is the one that gets talked about most. It's called level mode, and it has its own dedicated button on the control head. You push it, and the autopilot commands wings level, coordinated flight, whatever the aircraft was doing, a gentle bank, a steeper uncommanded roll, pitch excursion, level mode interrupts it, and returns to straight and level flight. The intent of level mode is exactly the scenario I opened with. Pilot incapacitation, spatial disorientation, task saturation at the worst possible moment. You need to stop the airplane from doing what it's doing. You need to do it right now, and you can't afford to think through autopilot logic. One button, the airplane goes straight and level. You buy yourself time. Cirrus put a similar concept into their fleet years ago with their Avidyne integration. But having it certified and available in legacy aircraft that were manufactured before GPS existed, that's a genuinely different thing. Now, let me talk about the safety data at the fleet level, because this is where the engineering argument becomes a human argument. The NTSB has published extensive analysis on the causes of fatal general aviation accidents over many years. The leading cause consistently is loss of control in flight. Not engine failure, not mid-air collision, not weather penetration specifically. Loss of control, the aircraft exceeding its flight envelope and the pilot unable to recover. The board's analysis identifies recurring patterns, stall spin scenarios on the base to final turn. Controlled flight into terrain in instrument conditions. Inadvertent IMC encounters by non-instrument rated pilots. And an important overlap category, instrument rated pilots who were current on paper but who hadn't been maintaining real hand flying proficiency, particularly on partial panel. A certified autopilot doesn't eliminate loss of control risk, but it changes the pilot workload picture in a meaningful way. An autopilot-equipped aircraft, single pilot in instrument conditions, is a different situation than a non-equipped one. Workload is lower, flight path precision is higher. The attention available for radio calls, chart reading, weather monitoring, and system management is greater. The pilot is managing the flight rather than physically flying the aircraft through every input. The NTSB has been explicit. In their most recent major recommendations on general aviation safety, autopilot equipage in single-engine aircraft operating in instrument conditions was identified as a priority safety improvement. The language the board chose is measured but clear. They believe wider autopilot equipage in the piston fleet would reduce fatal accident rates. The General Aviation Manufacturers Association, or GAMA, publishes a statistical data book covering the active GA fleet and accident rates broken down by equipment category. The numbers support the autopilot argument. Aircraft with certified autopilots show lower accident rates in instrument conditions than equivalent unequipped aircraft across comparable flight hours. That's a fleet-level signal consistent with the individual flight logic of workload reduction. Now, I need to be direct about what the GFC 500 is and what it isn't, because there's a risk of describing this technology in a way that doesn't serve pilots well. Level mode is not a panic button that makes everything okay. If you're already in an unusual attitude at low altitude, if you've entered a steep spiral and lost significant altitude, if you're below terrain, Level mode will do its best, but physics has its own opinion about outcomes. The value of level mode is highest in the early stages of a developing problem, before the problem has fully manifested. Autopilot complacency is real and documented. There are cases in the accident record where pilots became confused about what mode the autopilot was in, made inappropriate control inputs, and turned a manageable situation into an unmanageable one. Understanding your autopilot's behavior, how it transitions between modes, what it will do when it reaches a program constraint, how it responds when you disconnect, understanding all of that before you need it under pressure is not optional. It's part of flying the aircraft. The GFC 500 has a learning curve. Garmin's documentation is thorough. Reading it before flying coupled approaches in actual instrument conditions is the minimum. Many pilots take a formal autopilot ground course or fly with an instructor who knows the system before they rely on it in hard IMC. With all of that said, the fundamental capability is real. It's in service, and it's working. Let's talk about who it fits and what installation looks like. The approval basis is an Approved Model List Supplemental Type Certificate, or AMLSTC. This certification mechanism allows a single core approval to cover a list of specific aircraft models and serial number ranges. Garmin certified the GFC 500 against the core structural and electrical requirements, then expanded the approved model list one airframe variant at a time, validating each installation geometry, servo load path, and control system integration separately for each model. When the GFC 500 first reached the market, the AML covered a focused group of popular Cessna and Piper models. Since then, the list has grown substantially. Today, it covers the Cessna 172 series going back through its early variants, the Cessna 182 Skylane, the Cessna 177 Cardinal, the Piper Cherokee and Warrior family, the Piper Archer, the Piper Arrow, the Beechcraft Bonanza in most of its variants, and a growing number of other airframes. Garmin publishes the current AML on their website, and it's updated regularly. If you fly something on that list, you have a clean path to installation. A typical install in a Cessna 172 through an experienced avionics shop takes roughly 1 to 2 days of labor. The hardware, the servos, the control module, the control head, runs $8,000 to $11,000 depending on configuration. Installation labor generally adds $2,000 to $4,000. All in, most owners are looking at $10,000 to $15,000 for a complete installation. That's a real number. It's not trivial. But in the context of what legacy aircraft trade for today, a decent instrument-equipped Cessna 172 can command $60,000 to $80,000 or more in the current market. A $15,000 safety upgrade starts to look like a reasonable fraction of the asset's value, and it compares favorably to what that same upgrade would have cost in turbine aircraft terms a generation ago. For aircraft above the GFC 500's design envelope, pressurized piston, light turboprops, complex multi-engine, Garmin offers the GFC 600. Same foundational digital architecture, higher authority servos, yaw damper capability, and integration paths for more complex flight systems. The GFC 600 is where you're looking if you fly a pressurized Beechcraft, a Commander, or a Cessna Conquest. I want to close with the bigger picture because I think it's worth naming. What Garmin has done with the GFC 500 is part of a deliberate strategy to bring the avionics capability of new production aircraft backward through the existing fleet. The G1000 integrated flight deck debuted in new Cessna Skyhawks in the mid-2000s. The Garmin G5 standby instrument let owners replace dying vacuum attitude indicators with certified digital backups. The GTN series navigators brought WAS and Full Flight Management System, or FMS capability, to panels that had run on older King and Narco units for decades. The GNX-375 brought ADS-B transponders with traffic and weather display to aircraft that had never had any of it. The GFC 500 is the autopilot layer of that strategy. Each product hits a specific gap where old equipment is failing and modern alternatives didn't exist in retrofit form. Each uses the AMLSTC approach to spread certification cost across a large install base. Each integrates with the rest of the ecosystem. The cumulative effect is striking. A Cessna 172 built in 1973 can today be equipped with a glass primary flight display, a WAS GPS navigator, an ADS-B transponder with traffic and weather, and a two-axis digital autopilot with envelope protection and approach coupling. The airframe is 50 years old. The avionics package would be current on a brand new aircraft. The engineers who drew those original blueprints couldn't have imagined it. Whether that package makes sense for your aircraft depends on how you fly, how often you're in instrument conditions, and what your honest risk picture looks like. What I'd encourage is this. Check the AML on Garmin's website, have a conversation with an avionics shop that has done several of these installs, and think seriously about where autopilot capability fits in your personal safety margin data for this segment. Came from Garmin's GFC 500 product documentation, the NTSB General Aviation Safety Recommendation Reports, and the Gamma General Aviation Statistical Databook. All public, all worth reading more at radiohangar.com. I'm Vector. Stay precise.